And welcome back to the Long Distance Love Bombs podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg, and we got a good one today. Two of my best friends in the world are here together, Mr. Mark Groves and Ms. Kylie Macbeth. Mark Groves is a human connection specialist. He's the founder of Create the Love. He's the host of the Mark Groves podcast, which I was on years ago. His work bridges the academic and the human. He invites people to explore the good, the bad, the ugly, the beautiful sides of connection. His loving wife, Kai, is also known as Being is Beautiful on Instagram. She shares daily guidance, teachings on relationships, spirituality, embodied liberation. And they are here because they are birthing a book baby this week. It's called Release. Sorry, it's not called that. It's called Liberated Love, Release Codependent Patterns, and Create the Love You Desire. It's a must-read guide for how to identify relationship patterns that keep you stuck so that you can create true intimacy in an environment that fosters and celebrates mutual strength and liberation. From a real-life couple that split up, had a sacred pause, which we interrogate and talk about, and then get back together for what they call Relationship 2.0. And so we dive into the contents of the book in a very informal way that I think will come through in this audio. Because we are such good friends, because we've known each other for a while, it's a very free-flowing, fun, occasionally giggling-filled conversation. One thing I want to highlight, though, that I did not know when we were recording was if you order your copy of the book now, then you get two free gifts. You get a downloadable guided meditation to help you connect with your body's inner innate wisdom. And you also get a PDF workbook, which is designed to be used alongside the meditation that will help you dive deeper into integrating what you've learned. So that said, enjoy this conversation with Mark and Kai. Do check out the book. I've read most of the book, just being fully transparent and honest, and it's got so much in there. There's chapters on all kinds of stuff that you need to unpack, repack, dissect about your relationships, your past, your heart, your healing. It's really good. They've done an excellent job. I am so proud of them and always so grateful that we get to chat. So enjoy this conversation with Kylie Macbeth and Mark Groves. Welcome, Mark Groves and Kylie Macbeth, to the podcast.
I'm so excited to be here.
Cheer. Always an honor. Always an honor to be in your presence and on the pod. Now with Mark.
I've never interviewed two people at once.
This is
special. No.
This is great.
Amazing.
This wasn't your idea, but threesome.
This is not with the a married couple who I've known for years while my partner's sleeping in the bed in the room next to me. But I'm glad, you know, it took 1 minute for you to bring up a threesome. So that's maybe a new record for you.
Yeah, that actually might be.
I'm already shaking my head and it's literally 60 seconds in. So this should be a testament to how this is going to go. No, I'm just kidding.
But truly. In full transparency, I've done minimal preparation for this because I just thought, oh, I've known you guys for years. Like, this is going to be great. We'll just jam about all the things. But for those that have been living under a rock and have no idea who you are, maybe just a quick intro, if you could introduce yourself of like, what's your deal? Who are you?
What's your deal, Kai?
What's my deal? Well, my deal has shifted drastically in the last year as I become a mother. And I'm a full-time mama. But other than that, in addition to that, I should say, I work with women to help them liberate and break free from codependent patterns, shame, limiting beliefs, all the stuff that gets in the way of our ability to take up space. And now the co-author of the beautiful book, Liberated Love, that Mark and I wrote, which I'm very excited to, have out in the world and have that conversation out in the world. So those are some of the main things that define me today.
Yeah, you've become a mother and an author in the last year and 2 weeks.
It's a big double birth for me over here, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like so many things came to a head in the most beautiful way with like the pregnancy. Like we got pregnant and then we got our book deal. Probably we had finished our book proposal before we got pregnant and then got the book deal 3 months after we got pregnant, wrote the book while I was pregnant. And then now it's being birthed
the baby, then birth.
Yeah. The birth the baby, birth the book. It's like just back to back initiation in the most beautiful way. And also a lot of completion of like, I'd say the Mark and I, when we talk about liberated love, it was like the completion of a really giant chapter for us both professionally and then romantically, for us to get that book out in the world and completed before we gave birth to our son. Because let me tell you, once you give birth, everything for me at least shifted where it's like, okay, I would have that conversation differently. You know, I would write the book differently. And I don't think it needed to be written differently. I think it needed to be written in the way that it's been written. So
yeah, it would have had a different lens.
It would have had a different, right. So,
although it's still applicable, but it would have had a different lens.
Mark, maybe you can intro yourself and I'd love to hear more about the lens. Like, what would you have done different?
Oh, now I got to write another book proposal. My name is Mark Groves. I am obsessed with understanding human connection, relationships, dynamics, both interpersonally and as they move as systems. And, you know, and really a large part of that work is breaking free of codependent patterns. So, you know, it's about really how do you come fully alive? How do you step fully into your potential through whatever frictions you have in your life? It's just my belief. And I think a lot of people's belief or understanding that actually through relationship, that's probably the most potent place and the most repetitive place and the place that offers the most opportunities. And I think that love might be the thing that people are willing to actually change for, or pain from love is the reason we're willing to change because we don't want to experience it again. And so it's hard to kind of put into words what I do, but I think I really allow people to see things that they can't see and make sense of it, and then tap into that thing that allows them to change finally. And lens. Yeah.
What lens? Being the grand motivator to inspire change. Is that the gist?
Yeah, that's good. The grand motivator.
That's awesome, Jerry.
Yeah, that was good. And for the lens, how would the lens change? You know what? I'm not sure, but I just wouldn't want it to be different than what it was. I think it would. I don't think it would be as potent. Like it would be different. And it needed, as Kai said, it needed to be the way it was because it was like really written in the height of our experience together. And then when we had a kid, we were back in the initiations again. So
yeah,
like we had just rose out of it. And then you have a kid and you're like, oh, I'm back in it. So you're, even though I don't even know if the words would have made it sense had we written it right as we had a baby, because our brains were both so tired.
Yeah. There's a reality to like matrescence and patrescence, or that transition from maiden to mother and not
patrescence. I gotta Google for you.
It's the initiation, the journey that we go through when we become parents, and it changes everything.
Yeah, it does.
Like the way you think, the way you operate, the way you see the world, like it changes who you are for a very important reason, so that you can continue to preserve life so that our children have a better one.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's how it's shifted me, where it's like lit some serious fires. Now I just want to talk about it.
What was that word that you said? Matrescence and patrescence? I don't think I've ever heard those words.
Welcome to my life.
What do they mean?
Matrescence is just the journey from maiden to mother. And patrescence is the journey from not being a parent to the journey to being a parent. It's the initiation that you go through.
Is that the masculine version of it? Or no?
No, I don't believe so. Maybe. I thought patrescence was actually parents more so than matrescence.
Patriarch, patrescence.
I know, it does sound.
Yeah, I just wonder.
Patron, tequila. That was actually one thing I was considering as I read the book, or read parts of the book. I haven't admittedly read all of it, but just hearing you now, it seems like this idea of liberated love and this idea of parenthood is ever evolving, like
forever changing, new levels, new devils all the time. And so is liberated love something that ends, or is it a perpetual liberation of different layers and levels of who you're becoming and what you're experiencing?
Well, I'll say that liberated love to me is the choice. And it's a choice to live and love in a way that is freeing to anyone who's involved. You know, so the way that our relationships tend to be is that we tend to abandon ourselves for connection, or we avoid connection so that we don't get hurt. You know, we sort of have these two ways that we relate. And in our book, we talk about, and so we're really looking and exploring at codependency. And the way we define codependency in the book is a relational dynamic that where we source safety at the cost of our needs, our sense of self, and our overall well-being from something or someone. So it doesn't have to be a person. It could be through a behavior in a relationship to, because you can get safety from scrolling your phone. It's not actual real safety, but it's perceived safety. You know, through addictions, you can get perceived safety, even though they're not. And we know that. So in the book, we really walk people through like this commitment to fierce love. And the principles, you know, when we look at liberated love, some of them are like a dedication to telling the truth, like honoring the truth over everything. And you think about it, most family systems, most relationships actually avoid the hard conversations. Like that's normal. Like it's normal to be in relationships where you don't actually get to come fully alive. It's normal to be in relationships where you just repeat the same patterns and have the same conversations and the same arguments, and you never move beyond defensiveness, criticism, stonewalling. But what's beyond it? Beyond it is where the experience of unconditional love really is. And we have this opportunity through our relationships to do that. And we don't tend to take advantage of that. We tend to actually avoid that. And one of them, the other ones is the other principle of liberating love is to honor each other's path as our own, as their own. And that's not usually how we love either, is to like recognize that Kylie has a path that is separate of mine. I'd like it to walk alongside mine. I'd also like mine to walk alongside hers. But without actually even acknowledging and talking about that we're two separate selves, that just gets washed over. We just expect that we're forging one path and there's no option. But we know that your partner can leave you in any moment. That could just be a choice they make, which means they're making a choice to be beside you. But we take that for granted because we make quote unquote commitments. But most of the time, we actually don't make agreements about our commitments. We don't like, we don't make a commitment that the relationship is going to serve each person individually and together to become the best possible version of themselves, pursue their dreams, do everything they possibly can. We usually do that when we break up. When we break up, we're like, I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to tour Europe, which is great. I'm like, why not do these things when you're together?
Yeah. And the most typical vows are like, I'm going to be by your side forever, death till death do us part. But they don't often say anything of what you just discussed there, it seems. Kai, do you have anything to add to that?
Liberated love never dies. I'll just say that it becomes an embodied experience.
Yeah,
it really does. It's a way of being. That's what it feels like. It's once the template emerges through the fire that is the sacred pause, or that is the fire of descent that you, that relationships take us on. It, at least how I describe it and how we write about it in the book, is from relationship 1.0, like Mark described, the codependent patterns of outsourcing that safety and security from someone else at the expense of self. There's the sacred pause of that middle part where it's like something catalyzes us to do the work to liberate ourselves from those dynamics. And
yeah.
Once we're liberated from those dynamics, we have this felt sense of inner safety that's, I'm okay no matter what. I've got my own back. I have my own internal foundation. And from that felt sense of safety internally, we then can be more authentic in our relationships because we're not sourcing from something outside of us that limits our expression in the world. So that's like 2.0, is like, I'm not going to compromise my values or my truth or my body or my own limits anymore. And once you taste that level of embodied freedom, Like all of me belongs here and I've got my own back and I have people who support me and love me for that. It's hard to go back. It's hard to go back into the box, you know, it's hard to go back into the cage, if you will. And so it's, yeah, it never dies. And I think with parenting specifically, you know, to answer your question, to go full circle here is parenting just brings up more stuff for us to look at. And luckily, since Mark and I have the tools and are liberated and love each other unconditionally because we've navigated a breakup with love and got back together with love, we can have all the hard conversations because we have a strong inner foundation both in separately and together that allows truth to live. And let me tell you, parenting will press all the buttons.
Extra buttons. You didn't even know you had.
Yeah, it seems that way, that the child is just not even a soul or a body. It's just a package full of buttons. And you're like, oh, here's a thousand new buttons that get to push every part of me. Mm-hmm. So I just want to clarify for those listening that might not be aware of your journey. You guys were together for a while, broke up, got back together, got married, had a baby. That's like the very short fact-based synthesis.
Nice synopsis.
Yeah, it was very romantic the way I described it. But when you use the phrase sacred pause, I'm wondering if you could speak to that a little bit, because like for me, the first time I heard that, my woo-woo detector went off and I was like, oh, come on, what is this? This is just a breakup. What are you talking about, this sacred pause?
Is
there a distinction?
We just call it a sacred pause when you get back together, because you don't want to call it a breakup.
And I'll say that in the book, sacred pause is really used to describe taking a pause from your habitual behaviors. Mm-hmm. So the pause is about really bringing back this intentional process of healing, this intentional process of creating. We use the word container in the book. And, you know, I'm sure people listening, you've heard the word container being used about relationship. And it's really that the container itself within two people is between two people. It's a separate entity. And so when you're in a relationship or single and you're wanting to change your patterns, we talk about intentionally creating agreements about creating a pause. And the pause is to say, we're actually going to untangle first. And so if you're single, it's like you're going to stop dating, maybe, is one of your agreements. You're not going to be in relationship with anybody and source any attention from anyone and you start to get really cognizant of all the ways that you use attraction and communication and reject all the different things that happen in human dynamics. And so you take a pause from that, and then you have to be with the experiences that you're actually running from or that you're avoiding. And same in relationship, when, you know, someone's been together 10, 15 years and they create a sacred pause and really brewing forward these conversations, a lot of stuff's going to come up. And that's actually the purpose of the pause, is so that we can, you know, Esther Perel would say that you're going to break up and get back together, like get divorced and then stay together, get remarried. You know, this idea is the same, is like what was needs to come to an end, and what you're creating needs to now. And now you're being intentional about what you actually want to create from this relationship. And I would say that relationship 1.0 that everyone has, and if you're single, then it's relationships, like the way you were 1.0. That served exactly to get to this moment of awareness that I don't want to do it the same way anymore. Like some people stay married for 75 years, never changing. And then, you know, and then they brag that they were married 75 years, but they don't even like their spouse. And we're saying like, hey, why not create relationships where we get to hang out and enjoy each other's company? We're not avoiding each other. Hmm. No.
It seems like somebody that has been single for 5 years that hasn't been in a relationship during that time also can have a sacred pause from relationships. Do I understand that right?
Meaning
dating apps, putting yourself out there, etc.
There's something magical that happens when you actually enter an intentional cocoon or container, is what we described in the book, but we also use the metaphor of the butterfly, because you don't see what you can't see until you enter a container of removing any possibility to find that quote unquote, the one, because there's echoes, like even in our work together, when we're working with single people who've been single for a long time, they're like, I've been single for 5 years. I've been in a dating container. I've done it. And I'm like, no, you actually have not. You haven't removed it fully. You haven't been able to see what's driving your behaviors. You haven't even been able to see where all of your energy is going and how much you're seeking, how that seeking energy has taken up so much space in your consciousness. So in my experience with working with women who've been single for a long time, it's really potent to see what happens when they choose to enter that intentional space.
Because when they're on the dating scene, scrolling, swiping, etc., what I'm hearing is that they don't love that scenario, that they're looking for something outside of themselves. It's not an intentional, like, I'm here, I'm happy, I love my life. It's like a seeking or a searching. So what happens, just to follow up on that, like, what have you seen in people who decide, you know what, fuck it, like, I'm going to step away, I'm not going to do the dating thing for 2, 3, 6 months. Like, yeah. What shifts?
A big piece of that, especially that happens in this specific container, is they get okay with being alone. Like, they're actually, there's a difference between being alone and, what's the word I'm looking for? Alone and
lonely.
Lonely. There we go. Like, it's coming. Alone and lonely. And they face all the grief from the loneliness. They face the grief that hasn't been processed from previous relational dynamics. They face the grief that's really in the way of them to be able to be okay with themselves as they are single, wholly here now.
Yeah.
And removing dating, removing flirting, removing sexting, removing all of this external focused energy and moving all that energy back into self really allows them to create a deeper internal foundation to get really clear on what's been in the way. Not that there's necessarily always something in the way when we're single, but if we desire relationship and companionship, there's likely something in the way. But to grieve what we haven't had and what we haven't received, and also to grieve and be with the longing in a more loving way, I should say.
Yeah, there's a sense of self-trust that comes because you make an agreement and then you ideally keep it, right? So, you know, I was working with one woman we had agreed that she was going to do a 3-month container. It's like no dating, no nothing. And she was like, as soon as it became more real, she was like, I can do 1 month. I was like, look, you're negotiating with what you believe is possible for you. Like, you're already saying I can't do it, which means that you got to do it because there's a lack of self-trust. And I've worked previously with people where as the container and they're starting to get their flow, they're like really invested in themselves. They all of a sudden have so much free time because they've been investing all this energy and directing it at different people. And then like the perfect test will show up. You know, like if their pattern is emotional unavailability and friends with benefits, it's like the perfect one will show up. It's like coconut oil covered, like perfect. Everything that is almost what they desire, like maybe all the other characteristics, but they want availability. They want to be chosen. And they'll be like, this time is different. They'll want to break their container. They'll often break their container in order to engage in that. And then they'll feel the sense. I think about it as healthy shame. Because you're actually in violation of your own values when you do that, you sense that. And so where like shame might be considered toxic shame, all shame is not toxic shame. As an emotion, it's an experience when we violate our own morality. And that's an important experience to have, but can we listen to it? Because usually what happens when we don't have the capacity to hold shame and then change our behavior is we then stay in the breaking of our agreements. It's like addiction. Someone breaks, you know, gets unsober, what would be the term? They relapse. Unsober sounds nice. They relapse. And then because of the shame of the relapse, they then keep in the addiction because they haven't moved beyond the threshold. And what the container does is provide a threshold for them to move through into a space where they recognize themselves as emotional adults. And that way, when they're in relationship, they're able to trust their choices in people because they trust their choices in themselves. Before that, I would say the majority of people who, let's say, don't use their voice, don't share how they actually feel, play small, even avoid love, they don't trust themselves in connection. Like, avoidant people don't trust themselves in connection. They just might have their poop in a group alone and they have a sense of self-worth, but it's not in connection. You know, so there's an avoidance of connection. It's like when someone says, I'm afraid of commitment. They're not afraid of commitment. They're afraid of what commitment leads to. They're afraid of where it's going to go. They don't trust themselves in relationship to it. You know, and so containers and relationships really offer this opportunity to really be with the things that have never been excavated. Like, this world has every trick to make you not have to feel the thing. It's monetizable, exceptionally monetizable.
Yeah. And the person, if there is somebody that you're in a container, you're like, wow, that person seems ideal and exactly what that person will be there at the end of your container.
Right.
And that's like, that's actually part of the journey that Mark and I had to go through. I broke my own container, which shook me to my core because I was feeling so great. But that's just how strong these undercurrents are. Like, I had this fear that popped up as like, if you don't reach out, then you're going to lose them forever. And so I followed that fear. What?
What did you do? You broke the container with Mark? Is that what you mean?
I was in my own three month, no man diet container.
Freudian slip.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was in my own container that I had created to heal. And I was feeling really great. Started to trust myself. And I was about probably a little over 2 months into the container, and this fear popped up like rabid, like out of the deepest depths of my unconscious, and was like, if you don't reach out, you're going to lose them forever. And that fear took the driver's seat of my being. And I reached out to Mark, messaged him, we connected. And by the way, this is against all of my agreements that I had with myself. So you can imagine, like, wow, I was really in it. And then ended up making love with Mark.
Sweet love.
Really broke all my agreements. Really just wanted to F shit up for myself. And I, Jer, will never forget the hangover from that experience.
Yeah, you went deep in the descent.
I have never been in so much pain in my whole life, physical pain. I had so much shame and so much pain from breaking my own word to myself that it really shocked me. It was like, how did I get there? Like, that's how deep it was. Like, how I don't know how I got to that place where I broke all my agreements with myself. And so then I had to recommit to my container. Instead of letting the shame take over and collapsing back into a previous dynamic with Mark and just like going along with the fear, I was like, no, that's not going to work. Because the first imprint of our next relationship cannot be fear of like, I'm here because I'm going to love you. Because that's not choice. That's me letting fear take over and control. And so after that rupture, I healed with myself and, you know, apologized to Mark. And there were some things for us to work through there. Because it's also really sexy when somebody honors your own agreements in your own container too, you know? And so it's like, We all had something to learn from that dynamic or from that rupture. And then, yeah, I recommitted and went even deeper into my container and devotion to healing because I was shocked that I had broken my own container. I was like, awesome. I've been doing this work for almost a decade and I still get freaking rocked.
Yeah. So did you just like restart the clock? Or
I restarted the clock for, I think I added another 8 weeks on after that. After I broke the container, I was like, okay, you're not done. You have not gotten to the core. You've not gotten to the core of what's in the way of your ability to trust yourself and to trust yourself in connection with men.
Mm.
And I hadn't.
And as part of that extension, did you have to like call forward that same fear again? Like, does that make sense? Like the fear that arose that caused you to reach out to Mark and break the container. Was it like, okay, that's still in me, right? It lives in there. And so by adding that 8 weeks on, was that almost a call for that fear to come forward again so that you could address it in a healthier, more holistic manner?
Yes. I had to fully release Mark, actually, is what that fear brought up. It was like, oh, I'm still hooked into the hope that this is going to be what it might be. And I was like, I had to fully grieve the ending of our relationship.
Yeah.
I had to fully release what was so that I could make space for whatever needed to come next.
I'm curious if you had resentment to Mark for enabling you breaking your container.
Resentment might be the wrong word, but I had, you know, it's so funny to look back on this now and be like, gosh, I wish he would have stood for my container when I couldn't. Because I don't know what that wasn't the agreement. That's not what needed to happen, for sure. Not what needed to happen at all. It needed to be broken for various reasons for both Mark and I in our healing journey. But of course, looking back, I'm like, gosh, it would be awesome if somebody else
helped. Awesome if he held my integrity for me, which I think is important. You know?
So there is a both and to that. Like, it's not his responsibility, but also as a woman, if somebody holds their bar for you and it's like, no, you set a boundary and agreement here and I'm not going to let you push me on. It's also really sexy. It's like, oh, wow.
Yeah, it wasn't sexy in that moment. I was,
we were not sexy in that moment.
Oh, but sexy. Hey,
I'm just thinking of like from an addiction lens, if someone has alcohol problems and says to me, hey, I'm going to do 3 months sober. And then after 2 months, they come over to my house with a bottle of wine. And I'm like, yo, here's the corkscrew. Here's some glasses. Like, let's drink.
It's terrible.
Yeah, except if I'm drinking with her, I got the problem too.
Yeah, all that's right. The problem.
Right.
That's
all right. If we both agreed to be sober for 3 months, that's the distinction.
Yeah. Well, in that, like, I also have the addiction. So it's like, I didn't stand for hers because I didn't stand for mine.
Exactly.
You know, so that's, of course, the next level. And I've done that in relationship where someone makes an agreement with themselves and then they try to break it. And you're like, nah, not going to be part of that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to be part of that. I don't want to be part of the reason that you don't like yourself anymore, you know, and because then it'll be projected on me. But with her, I didn't stand in that. It's because, you know, I didn't know the extent, like in hindsight, which I don't remember all the details of it, but in hindsight, like, I don't know where she's at if breaking that agreement and her container, she's actually ready to do. You know, I didn't know the extent of how important that extra month was, like making it to the end. I definitely do now, but she was in her own discernment, her own choice too. So it's like, I trusted that she was making the choice that was best for her. But then in the aftermath, it was definitely not. And I held space for that. You know, I held space for that. I also should have hit the stop button. Like, I should have, you know, in hindsight. But that actually enabled us to find a different level of strength after that, because it was another space where we, you know, much like the definition we talk about in the book of codependency, like that's another way that we were sourcing safety beyond ourselves. And then you can't trust yourself in the depths of connection. Even if you think you can, you can't. If you violate your own morality, your own values, then you won't trust yourself, because you'll always know that if something happens that's similar and you're put to the test, you won't know that you have access to your voice. And if you don't have access to your voice, you can't direct your life and you'll probably have anxiety.
That sounds great. I'm thinking just about drinking, for example, this idea of Kylie, what's happening?
I just love you.
Kai's laughing.
That's great.
That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah. Sounds really great. All that anxiety. Yeah. But from like an addiction perspective or just drinking, right? If you decide to no longer drink, it seems like there's an identity shift there, right? And you can relapse, you can be sober. And it strikes me that from a relational context, you can have a relational relapse, so to speak. And that might be the rupture of the sacred pause. You can have relational sobriety where you're, it sounds like a lot of what this book is about is facilitating awareness in people at a really deep level so that they can get clear on what's happening and learn to trust and love and honor that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. Perfect. It walks people through the path of understanding why they do what they do. What are their patterns? the overarching, we use the framework of attachment because it's such a simple way to understand why we do what we do. And then we, on top of all that, we add in the nervous system, because really no transformation is really possible without tapping into the nervous system, understanding it. And I think what I love about understanding the nervous system is that it contextualizes why we do things that don't make sense. Because, you know, we're these biological beings, because we have consciousness, we tend to think we're not. But when we're actually scared or we're actually in conflict, we do go down automated pathways that we've had since usually, you know, an infant, you know, and that programming happens for a while. And it can also keep getting more programs as we grow up. So to actually shift and create new neural pathways requires an intentional pause. It requires, you know, it's that famous Viktor Frankl quote, like the space between stimulus and response is the most important space. And he definitely didn't say it this way.
No, you nailed it. Yeah.
Is the most important space because it's the space that allows you to change your life and choose your life. And we're saying like that pause is a choice. So already you're in choice. I mean, picking up the book is a choice. There's no one's life who, if you do everything in the book and you read it through, you will completely change your life and your relationships, not just your relationships. Your whole life will change because you will no longer have the capacity to be in relationships that require you to abandon yourself. You'll no longer entertain people that don't value you because you value you.
That was like a powerful testimonial from an author about their work.
I was like, wow. But there is a truth to that. If you devote the time and energy and space and you're devoted to change and you really want it, I do believe that if you implement what we're saying and do the work, that it works.
Right? I don't just believe it. I know it.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Like, I'm like, if you do, it's the path we've walked. I've experienced it. We've integrated it. If the evidence is my lived experience. You know?
And
yeah, I'll
go ahead.
No, go for it. No, I was just thinking, you know, to kind of bring it back to your example of the addiction piece of like with alcohol, is like, we're not recommending cutting cold turkey. You know what I mean? Like, one of the reasons why I love our book and also our path is we're talking about how do we resource ourselves so that we can make this shift and change in our lives with more care, capacity, and support, so that we can actually create sustainable change, right? Like, we wouldn't just say to an addict, like, okay, just cut it all off. I mean, some people would just cut it all. And then it's like, no, well, how are you going to deal with what alcohol was dealing with? You know what I mean? How are you going to resource? Are you going to work with a therapist? Are you going to work with a coach? Are you going to reach out and have, you know, for their world, it's AA and a sponsor. Like, there's all of these things that support people in making this shift and change. And so what resourcing is crucial.
Yeah. In AA, the framework is about providing nervous system support. Yeah. You know, you not only do you become someone's sponsor, you have a sponsor. So now you're in connection and relationship, and people depend on you and you depend on someone. So you're the way out of addiction is relationship. You know, as Harville Hendricks and Helen Hunt say, we're born in a relationship, we're wounded in relationship, we heal in relationship. Healing separate of relationship is not an actual thing. Because you can heal and do healing work, but you must re-enter the place where the wound occurred so you can begin to trust yourself. You can restore joy into your experience in relationship. A lot of us, we don't experience joy in relationship. Like, a lot of people are just in a relationship. And I'm like, no, like, you got one turn around this rock, maybe, depending on your belief system.
Like, do you?
Yeah, like, you got multiple lifetimes, but at least make this the lifetime that you actually completed all the lessons and the assignments, you know?
And it does seem like there's this socially acceptable or culturally approved narrative around being in a relationship is like, happy wife, happy life, or...
Right, happy spouse, happy house.
Yeah, it's normalized to lose yourself. It's rewarded by its length rather than its quality, etc. I know you know all this stuff, but question.
That's good for people to know.
Yeah. So for those that have heard to this point and they're thinking, hey, this book is just going to be a guide to breaking up with my partner, that feels scary and hard and horrible. I don't want to read this book. Like, just to reiterate, it doesn't sound like that's actually what this book is.
No,
so you can do this work. You could do this work in relationship, in the same house, even.
100%. This, we guide people through creating a container together. I would recommend for a couple that they read it together, because you wouldn't be able to, first off, one would have so much more knowledge about their patterns, and you can change a relationship if you're changing yourself, but the other person will need to change to accommodate the shifts in the person who's changing. Like, the system can't stay the same. It has to start orienting. Like, if someone never uses their voice and all of a sudden they do, the system's not used to that. It's going to cause a disruption in the system. This is how all systems work, you know? And then what happens is, once you're through those sort of, and this is why a container is important, is once you're through that threshold where the relationship has now started to oscillate differently around values and voice, and there's spoken agreements. I know so many people in a relationship that they haven't talked to their spouse about, or their partner, or the person they're dating, about what they actually want to create together. There's not agreements about how they handle conflict. There's not, and Stan Tekken talks about this, that the reason relationships end is because they don't start with agreements, like clear things of what are we creating here? And like, what is the purpose of the relationship? You know, most people, the purpose of the relationship is just to like tell people they're married. You know, it's not like this deeper thing like, oh, so that we can grow together, so that we can create something together. And being able to do that, now at least your relationship isn't just bumping along, hitting deep bumps. It's now like, oh, we're actually going to use that bump to get back into direction of our intention.
Yeah, like that's not a bump. That's a ramp to like do right. Some
that's a ramp, exactly.
Tips.
It is an uphill. It might feel challenging. You might feel like you have a weighted vest on. But once you're through it, think of the vistas you can see from up there.
You're flying.
I picture that classic scene with Homer Simpson on the skateboard going over the Grand Canyon or something. He like falls on Bart's skateboard and he's like launches and he's freaking out. And then halfway through he's flying and he's going to make it. But then he like splats into the wall on the other side and like falls down. It seems like that's an appropriate analogy to what a relationship can do. But at the end, he's okay. And he has a great story. Mm-hmm. And life goes on.
And we talk about in the book. Sorry, babe. Did you want to go?
No, hopefully this book helps people avoid that in scenario, you know, where you're actually meeting it before it hits the wall, right. You know, before there's like a completely catastrophic event or
an infidelity and an ending that seems unexpected.
Right. Like, this is allowing us to, if an ending is necessary, then end it well. Right? To not create more pain and karma for both of us moving forward into our next relationship. Like, how do we use relationship to actually heal? And sometimes a lot of healing, or most of the time, if there is an ending, you can actually heal through that too. You know, it doesn't have to be what it's been, which is when you look at how we treat endings in our culture, and also maybe even in your own relational history, they haven't necessarily been conscious or loving.
Yeah, they're not intentional. They're not, it's like we want to punish the other person. We're hurt. We might want them back.
It's like how a child would respond. And so it's like we're inviting a different way to move through endings and beginnings and re-beginnings as adults, as emotionally mature adults.
And look, if you don't want to confront the truth of your life, then the book's not for you. Like, it just isn't. If you are not ready to make a change in your relationship, then it's not for you. Because we have a whole chapter that's called Getting Right with Reality. Because it's like, we have all these strategies to avoid actually being with what is real. And we're saying, stop it. Like, the reason we have addictions is because we're avoiding pain. We're saying, like, just get with what's real. We're not here to say, stay together, break up. That's because that would be us putting into the book our intention that you must stay together forever. That's the problem. We're saying, bring truth forward between the two of you. Talk about the things that you are not talking about. Create solid agreements of what you want to create together. Ask each other, do you want to? Because if one person is like, I don't want to, you're wasting your time. You know, and it's like, instead, be with reality, our intention is to bring truth forward to the relationship, because that's love. Truth is love. Love is truth. And if we can, if you stay together because of that, you will be served such a more beautiful relationship. Your children will experience different things. Even if you depart because of that, your children will be served from that. Everyone in your system will be served because you're now someone who walks in the integrity of what you desire and what's true. That's going to shake some systems, because there's a lot of people walking around being like, I'll just pretend this isn't reality. But there's a lot of reality that we need to confront reality. That's the only way you change.
It sounds like what you're describing, I picture like a house, like if a relationship, guys already laughing. Like if a relationship is a home, and then in every room, there's just a giant elephant. It sounds like what you're saying here is like, yo, friend, read this book, like admit that there's an elephant in your home, in your relationship, in this room, in your partner, in your heart, in your soul, whatever. And like, start learning about elephants, you know, like let's admit that there's elephants in the room and let's start addressing them.
There is one anyway. So like, take it out of the room, you know, instead of feeding it. You know, and this is,
so we all know people, as you said, that have been married for decades and decades and decades, and then suddenly they have a conversation. It's like, I don't really like being married. It's like, I don't really like being married either. It's like, why do we wait 30 years to talk about this elephant in the room? It's like, let's just talk about it. It sounds like what you're saying.
Yeah. We're saying like, bring forward everything you're afraid to bring forward, because it's actually in service of the relationship. Like we're saying that the material that is friction, that is conflict, that is, these are all opportunities. They're all opportunities. And we walk through, how do you do that? Like how, because this all sounds great. It's like, no, we walk through like, how do you actually step into your relationship that way? And if you're single, how do you start to date with that level of intention? And you're just going to see like, you don't waste your time anymore.
Kai, what do you say to that, to folks that are hearing all this and thinking, oh, I could never do that. That sounds impossible. That sounds hard. It sounds scary.
It is. I would say, no, it really is. It is hard work. It is the most courageous work you will ever do. Absolutely. Because like we said in the very beginning, you are shifting who you are, your identity, all of the ways that you've built up to source safety and security in your life, from being the people pleaser, the caretaker, the perfectionist, the high achiever, all of these ways that we've been taught and told who we need to be in order to be loved, they start to shake, right? When you choose this path, it's like, okay, I don't want to be saying yes when it's a no, or I don't want to be the perfectionist anymore, or I don't want to, you know, work 80 hours a week. Like, I would say, first, I hear you. And I'd say it's possible. And when you start asking yourself these questions, to find people in your life who can support you in holding you through this journey. I really do believe that we need to be resourced in order to take this journey fully.
It sounds
so I would
like,
say get support.
Get support. Just find your people.
Find your people. I mean,
well, you need support from yourself, you know, through different modalities, like starting to meditate, do breath work. Like these are tools, somatic work. Like you start to get connected more to yourself.
Yeah. And I would say it's worth it. Like I remember when Mark and I were ending relationship 1.0, some of the biggest fears I had was like, I'm never going to find somebody else like Mark. He's a good guy. He's like all of this stuff. But like these fears were driving the car. But my body was literally energetically, physically, emotionally, I was bleeding out. I was like on my deathbed. It was a life or death choice. Okay. You either choose life and end the relationship and end these patterns and end this way of being, or continue to collapse into codependency. And
you had a crazy dream, right? About like a house or something.
Yeah, that house is on fire. Remember the burning house dream? Yeah, I kept having a dream of a burning house that said it's time to go. And I kept pushing it down, down, down into my unconscious for years until it came back again right before we ended relationship 1.0. And it was like this time, it was like, you're either going to listen to your soul and leave and trust that there's something beyond this, or you're not, or you're going to burn in the house. Like the house will literally collapse. And that was my path. That's not everybody's path, but for us and where we were at and where I was at, we needed to end relationship 1.0 in order to do the work that was necessary for us to create a new template for relationship 2.0. So I would say, trust what's on the other side. Like, it is worth it. It is worth it to hit the pause button. It is worth it to do this work. It is worth it to feel what you don't want to feel. It is worth it like 1,000 times over. Like, wow. Like, I could cry thinking about it, because like now we're married and we have a son, and I'm like, my heart is like every single day is having to expand to hold the amount and depth of love I feel for my husband and for my son, for the world. It's like, it just keeps on expanding. And I don't think that, well, I know that it would have looked different if I hadn't done the healing work.
Hmm.
To break intergenerational patterns and actually become a mother with agency.
Just that.
Yeah, just that.
Do you guys have a hard stop? Like, do we need to stop talking? Or do you have a few more minutes? Or
Yeah.
We're good.
You're good. Okay. I'm curious to hear your perspectives on grief and the role of grief in this entire process, because it sounds like we're discussing endings, deaths of identities, deaths of beliefs, radical change, uncertainty, letting go of dreams, fantasies, visions. It strikes me that grief is a core part of this process. Anything to share on that?
Yeah, you'll be swimming deep in it. You know? That's a good thing. You know, I just say, like, whenever you recognize a truth and a pattern, you then have to be with the grief that you've avoided it and you had survival strategies to not pay attention to it. Or that you've, let's say you're picking a certain type of person. When you finally take responsibility that you're picking a certain type of person, which is not negating the experience of being victimized by a person, but to say, like, oh my God, I now know that's not good for me. So I have to be with the grief of that, you know? And so that's why you need community. That's why you need resources, because you're not meant to hold everything alone. You're not meant to, you know, you need friends. You need people who you're like, hey, I'm just not okay today. Or I need you to just sit beside me on the couch. You know, that there's a way that we can, because I think we get really lost. We get really afraid that we're going to get lost in the darkness. And that's why it's important to have a tether to somebody.
Yeah. And also the container creates enough containment for us to actually feel what needs to be felt. Right? It's a contained initiation instead of an uncontained initiation, which leads to trauma. This is a contained initiation, which actually leads to integration.
Yeah. So an uncontained initiation is that there's not actually like an intention and a turning towards what's happened.
Container.
Right.
To hold a holding space to actually community. Yeah. Community, mentor, therapist. Container, literally creating your own container, because it will actually be supportive for you.
Yeah, we're saying, like, here's how you go through this change in a way that will shift you and grow you, and you'll become different in the best ways instead of just avoiding it. You know, like, we go through initiations of breakups, and then what do? We go drinking, you know, and don't get me wrong, I found some solace in that experience in my past. I realized then I went through another breakup and I was still finding myself at the bottom of a pint glass. You know, like, I was in the same experience. I never moved beyond it. I didn't learn from them because I never sat with it.
Yeah. And there's so much to say about grief. There really is, like, all of the things that we're having to grieve, like, personally, historically, intergenerationally, culturally, you know, there's a lot to grieve right now. And so I think at this time on the planet, we all really need to get good at grieving and grief specifically. And so we have a whole chapter on grief and supporting people moving through grief, tapping into grief, feeling grief. We give a resource to create a ceremony to be held in your grief, and then to get curious about other ways to be with your grief. I've held this container with over, I don't know, hundreds of women now. And wow, the amount of tears, their holy tears, just that I've witnessed and seen is such an honor. But it's like, wow, we are grieving a lot. And when we come together to grieve, it's really powerful what happens.
Mm.
There's a lot to grieve.
There's a lot to grieve. But on the other side of that is spaciousness and freedom and aliveness and joy. The one of my favorite quotes is Khalil Gibran, and he says, the more that sorrow carves into my being, the more joy I can contain.
100%.
It seems like that's, that. While you're in it, you're like, nah, fuck this. I don't like this. I don't like grief.
This is totally, it's a process of resensitization. And we're supposed to be sensitive beings, because when we're sensitive, we're alive. We're open to being touched by life. And the problem is through all the pains and traumas we've experienced on this journey, both intergenerationally, historically, and personally, we've been cut off. We've been split off from our hearts, from our bodies, from our beings, from our essence. And this is a journey of reconnection, of resensitizing yourself to yourself and to the world, so that you can actually feel again, so that you can come alive, so that you can stand for something, both yourself and the world.
That was really good.
That's good.
Yeah. Mark and I are both just like, yeah, that was great. Yeah. You really said it.
It should be a clip.
Well, I'm turning red. You're making me embarrassed, but it's like, that's what we're doing. That's what this process is all about. It's about reconnecting what we've been severed from culturally and in every way, unfortunately, in our systems, severed from ourselves. And that there's no need to point fingers or blame. It's like, there's no time for that anymore anyways. It's like, there's no time for that.
Like, sort it out. Like, we got stuff like, to do.
We're running out of time. We have to actually like do something different.
Yeah. One thing I was just thinking about was, it strikes me that this endeavor of seeking or creating liberated love is like equivalent to going on a vacation or a trip, right? Like, you don't just like book a flight, get on the plane and arrive. It's like, maybe you read some blog articles about the place that you're going to. Maybe you talk to other people that have been there before. Maybe you do some research, you pack and repack. Maybe you buy something that you need, right? And it feels like this book that you've created, because as I was flipping through it, I was like, oh, they talk about somatic stuff. Oh, they talk about grief. Oh, they talk about boundaries. Oh, there's exercises to do. It seems like an entire travel guide of like about this destination that you are describing. Like, here's how you get from A to B. Like, here's how we did it, things to consider. And it just is jam-packed with stories, resources, knowledge. And I like that you wrote it from different perspectives. So you'll chime in like, hey, it's me, Mark. Or like, hey, it's me, Kai now. And so it's like two voices. It feels very relatable. Feels like just talking to you individually. It's good. You guys have done a good job. It's a good book.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, it feels good to have out in the world now, you know, like cautiously good.
And also, you know, a big thanks to you, Jer, for being such a huge part of both Mark and I's journeys and 1.0, the Sacred Pause, and 2.0. Like, it is because of people like you in our lives and the love you gave us both unconditionally through that whole process that we're even here and able to write the book.
Yeah. So. You're so welcome. Honored. I remember having moments like where I had just talked to Mark or was texting Mark and then like walked into Turf and saw you and was like, oh shit, like now I have to be Kai's friend. It's such a weird place to be of like hearing different versions of the same experience.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm just so grateful and glad that you made it through. And that it's been really special to see the experience in its entirety. Like Groves, I know we've had conversations when you were in it. And it's like, I left a kind of sarcastic comment on a post you did the other day of like, oh, don't worry, man. Like, you're going to knock her up, get married, and write a book about this one day. Yeah, like, if you Like if you had only known that, right? But in the depths of it, it's so murky and scary. And so to just have been witness to that entire adventure, it feels really, really special to see. Special and inspiring, truly. Like to see the work and the intention with which you devoted yourselves and your lives and the work that you do in the world is like, it's really inspiring to me. And I'm glad you're my friend. Friends? I don't know how to say a plural on a podcast, but I love you both. I'll put all the links in the show notes, but is there anything left to be said that we haven't covered or that you're like, yo, final words of wisdom?
Well, I think what I would like people to hear is that it's temporary. Like the experience, you don't know, as you just alluded to, you don't know what you're being brought towards. You don't know what's being called of you, asked of you, that is trying to be done through your experience of relationship in this topic, right? Is like the breakup, the frictions you're having, all this stuff is material for you to get into alignment with your own integrity, your own desires. And you really want to start to create this sense of trust where everything you do in your life is actually with grace. And I think a lot of the confusion is that grace means, or compassion means, that we're going to tolerate things. And we're saying, actually, no, grace is not that. Grace burns stuff, you know, but it's like we start to move through our life in a way that we're very intentional, but our commitment is to truth. Our commitment is to our own integrity and alignment, and also ensuring and creating an environment with our partner and our kids that ensures and invites the same from them. Like in liberated love, you do not win if your partner loses. I mean, that's true of every relationship. You don't win if your partner loses, you lose. And we're saying like, you can actually be conscious about this. You can have conversations about this. That is about like, how do both people win? And, you know, we like to reinforce to people that when we liberate ourselves, everybody in a dynamic is liberated. They just might not know it yet. And they might be afraid of liberation, just like anyone listening might be. Because when you recognize how much power you actually have, you're going to grieve the fact that you haven't used it in the most beautiful way. So go buy the book if you feel called. I can get it wherever books are sold. The audio version, Kylie and I discuss each chapter at the end.
Oh.
We discuss something from each chapter. Yeah.
Is it pretty free-flowing and random at times?
You could imagine.
I'm not sure. I haven't listened to the edits of it. They might have taken out a bit of my randomness. But it's definitely random. It's very conversational. Yeah. It's good. We were really excited about it.
Nice. All right. Love you. Thank you.
Love you,
brother.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Wasn't that good? Super fun. As mentioned in the show notes, I've got links to everything, their Instagram account, the website for you to purchase the book. Don't forget that you get the two freebies included. You get the guided meditation and the workbook to help you really synthesize and integrate all the learnings, all the teachings from the book and the meditation. Follow them on Instagram. Well, follow one of them on Instagram. I don't know what's going on with Mr. Mark, but as of this recording, he might be gone soon. What else? Thanks for being here. Thanks for the reviews, the good reviews especially, the 5-star ones in particular. And for sharing my work, my words, the podcast, I appreciate your kind and generous efforts to make the world a more compassionate, understanding place. I love that we're all trying to collect and become connoisseurs of silver linings. Long may it last. Long may it rain. I will talk to you soon.